They say that life's a game and then they take the board away. They give you masks and costumes and an outline of the story. Then leave you all to improvise their vicious cabaret. In no longer pretty cities, there are fingers in the kitties. There are warrants, forms and shitties and a jackboot on the stair. Sex and death and human grime in monochrome for one thin dime. At least the trains are run on time, they don't go anywhere. Facing their responsibilities either on their backs or on their knees. There are ladies who just simply freeze and then are turned away. And the widows that refuse to cry be dressed in garter and bow tie, be taught to kick their legs up high in this vicious cabaret. At last the 1998 show, the ballet on the burning stage. The documentary scene upon the fractured screen, the dreadful poem scrawled upon the crumpled page. There's a policeman with an honest soul, the scene whose head is on the pole. He grunts as he fills his bride bowl with a feeling of unease. He briskly frisks the torn remains, draw fingerprints out of crimson stains, and endeavors to ignore the chains that he walks into his knees. But his master in the dark nearby inspects the hands with brutal eye that have never brushed a lover's thigh but have squeezed a nation's throat. He hungers in his secret dreams for the harsh embrace of cruel machines. His lover is not what she seems and she will not leave a note. At last the 1998 show, the situation tragedy. Grand office slick with soap, cliffhangers with no hope. The water gallery, the flooded gallery. There's a girl who was good but not sharp, is desperate for her father's love. Believes the hand beneath the glove is what she needs to hold. But she doubts her husband's morality. She decides that she is what he is in the land of doing as she pleases. And outside in the cold, the backdrops peel and the sets give way, and the cars get eaten by the play. There's a murderer at the matinee, there are dead men in the aisles. The patrons and the actors draw a shelter if the show is through. Sidon looks away the cue, but the foes of Marsha smiles. At last the 1998 show, the Todd song no one ever sings. The curfew chorus line, the comedy divine. The bulging eyes of puppets, strung by the screen.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Ani, and I'm here with Lynn.
Good morning.
And we are Positively Revolting. We hope you are too. And today, look at that. It's 5 minutes after 8 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. And today on Positively Revolting, we celebrate the spirit of rebellion.
Woohoo! Guy Fawkes Day.
It is Guy Fawkes Day. And as we all know, remember, remember, the 5th of November, gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know no reason why gunpowder and treason should ever be forgot. So goes the children's rhyme from Britain. And, of course, actually our opening music, just to note.
And we also have masks on. You can't see us.
Thank God it's radio.
Uh-huh.
The opening music was from the movie V for Vendetta, which Lynn found for us this morning. Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
I know that that nursery rhyme was originally written to warn all future generations that treasonous activities don't pay off. But I've always looked at it a little differently. For those of us who thirst for a new world, we base, you know, that world that's based on truth, beauty, compassion, and connection. We work to get it by various means. We build community through daily interactions, choosing to support local economies and sustainable practices. We teach ourselves and one another cooperative ways of relating to each other and the planet. But what do we do with this world of domination around us? The world of corporate rule and business as usual. The world of the vicious cabaret. How do we get through to people who believe that a good life is to serve one's corporate masters and get the latest car, Xbox, iPhone, or what have you? For people stuck in that hamster wheel, comfort feels like freedom. And yet, one cut seldom seems happy in their lot. They seek ever flashier consumer goods to reward themselves for working in a situation that is ultimately unsatisfying. That situation, it leaves them feeling too drained to do little more than watch television for about 4.5 hours a night.
Wow. People do that, don't they?
That's the average.
Is that the average?
It was just sent to me a couple weeks ago, actually, from Kaiser. Because I have Kaiser Healthcare and, you know, it was their campaign to, like, get people to be active.
Suck your brains for 4.5 hours a night. That seems to work, apparently.
It, you know, I have to say, it stuck out to me. 4.5 hours a night of television viewing is our national average. Yikes. And in that 4.5 hours a night, I think that the television viewing is actually rather important in keeping the whole cycle going. Because for that amount of time, the viewer is in a very suggestible state, and having their choices for a quiet life validated through faux news or Fox News, depending how you want to pronounce that, and adverts for ever more glorious consumer goods to make your life better and to give you more sex appeal that you'll be too tired to use. Following on last week's theme of transformation, I want to discuss the transformation of this culture. Out with the old and in with the new. We need a broad-based coalition to resist the dumbing down of our culture, to reorganize corporate rule does not serve our interests, to recognize that corporate rule does not serve our interests, and to put a stop to the military-industrial complex and the prison-industrial complex. We need to put the message out there in such a way as to make it easy to spot the connections between topics, connect the dots. And we invite you to participate in this discussion. You can call in at 503-231-8187 and share your thoughts on resistance and rebellion with everyone as we have this community discussion of where do we go from here. We've had these rather dismal midterm elections.
And not just the elections, but the entire spectacle that went around I don't have a TV, so I was not subjected to a lot of the advertising. I heard people saying things like, wow, I'm looking forward to cars coming back. Car advertising is coming back. Which is a sad state in and of itself. But the amount, now I'm sort of heartened a little bit that the amount of money that was poured in, if you actually got your votes counted, I'd love to see who actually in the red states, how many had Diebold machines counting their votes. In California, they apparently still do paper ballots.
Go fig.
Yeah, and here we sort of have paper ballots.
We have a trace.
That the spectacle, the amount of spectacle and money put into foisting bigger idiots than ever known to humankind, and yet it didn't work. I mean, it worked, and yet I guess because I'm in the Portland bubble sometimes. In Oregon, it didn't work quite so well.
Not as well, but it still.
It was what an incredible waste of enormous funds when we have no schools and
yes.
Healthcare.
Good Lord, yes. You know, Walt Whitman said, resist much, obey little. And that's actually...
Oh, that Walt.
He's such a
something
wit.
About that Walt name, yeah.
That's actually from Walt Whitman's Caution. And the full verse is, to the states or any of them, or any of the cities of the states, resist much, obey little. Once unquestioning obedience, once fully enslaved. Once fully enslaved, no nation, state, city of this earth ever afterwards resumes its liberty. I would actually go ahead and say that that's true for individuals as well.
Mm-hmm.
That once a person develops unquestioning obedience, especially to a political system or an economic system, they are enslaved by that system. The system does not need a whole lot of overt help in keeping people in line because most of us are very capable of doing it for ourselves. We have our own internalized oppressor. And we do that, you know, we keep ourselves in line, we clip our own wings, and we're also very quick to clip each other's wings. You see that most dramatically in parents clipping their children, because, you know, we want to make them socially acceptable.
Well, yes.
So it's very important that they behave well in ways that might be against human nature, frankly. We see us being taught to ignore our bodies in the school system, to respond to bells instead of the rhythms of our bodies to tell us when it's time to go out and play, when it's time to focus, when it's time to eat. But I'm not hungry yet. Well, this is the time you eat. The bell told you it's time to eat. This is the time you get to eat. If you don't eat now, you don't get to eat all day. That kind of stuff, you know, is ultimately not a healthy and helpful practice in a society. In societies where people are actually taught to honor themselves and honor their own needs, honor their bodies, listen to themselves, be in relationship with themselves and each other, things go differently.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's also the whole socialization process, the gender role socialization process, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, conformity. You know, conformity has a huge role in making sure people stay in line. And, well, if you're not conforming, you're not socially acceptable, you're going to be ostracized. There's all these penalties, right?
Yeah, well, and I really like what you talked about, thinking about today, that comfort feels like freedom. That is my big...
That's your bugaboo of the day?
My bugaboo Achilles heel that, yeah, comfort feels like freedom. Because it is. Comfort is nice. And
well,
it's comfortable.
Yeah.
And there's something about that that's just lovely, but that is not freedom.
Concur.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that sort of warm, fuzzy comfort, sort of cloying comfort that keeps people in the hamster wheel, that keeps people safe, right? Because you want to be safe.
Yeah.
Safe.
Got to be safe. Security.
Exactly. So step away from the vehicle. You know, following human impulses, I mean, that internalized oppressor goes really deep. And if you happen to be part of a group of people who is on the downside of oppression, be that a queer person in one part or another of the LGBTQ spectrum, be that a person of color, be that a person who is experiencing poverty, be that, you know, somebody who, well, you don't see yourself reflected in those car ads or the Yahoo My Way ads or the, you know, all of those other mediators of reality telling you what's real, what your life should look like. If
and
you
what's
were only
Angelina doing today?
Successful.
What is Lady Gaga up to? The important things that get crowded in our mental hard drives.
Indeed.
That are not, I was reading, for the Society of the Spectacle, one of the preface to the second edition by Feuerbach, is that how I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, about that truth is considered profane and only illusion is sacred. And if we aren't there now, I'd like to see when we would be. But we would really like to hear from y'all out in the KBOO listening audience. We would love to hear what your ideas are about breaking the spectacle.
Indeed.
And to call that, it would be 503. I've been gone so long, I forget the number now. What's the?
It's 503-231-8187.
Yes, thank you.
Lynn has been on a little sojourn, haven't you?
Yes. I was got to see an interesting version of Hamlet in Ashland that breaks the spectacle.
Nice.
Because Hamlet's a little bit about a spectacle of illusion, isn't it?
Indeed. Hamlet, one of my favorite of the Shakespearean plays.
Yeah. Oh. And they had the guy that played it looked an awful lot like our program director, Mr. Chris Merrick. It was very interesting. And acted a little bit like him, too.
So you were mentioning the Society of the Spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
And Guy Debord wrote in the 60s about the decline of our real social life. Our real personal lives. And he wrote of the decline as he wrote of that decline as a movement of being into having and having into merely appearing. He called that the spectacle in which relations and between commodities supplant relations between people. It's really the hard and fast birth of the consumer society we find ourselves in now.
Deeply in.
In which passive identification with the spectacle supplants genuine activity. Think keeping up appearances. Think keeping up with the Joneses. Think bigger, faster, shinier hamster wheels. In the 60s, he wrote of needing to disrupt the spectacle through the creation of a bigger spectacle to draw conscious attention to the otherwise unseen. To do this, he suggests one consciously create a situation in which life involves using spectacular images so that spectacular images and language act to disrupt the flow of the spectacle itself. It jars people. It gets you thinking again. It turns off the meme coming at you from the television and catches one's attention for a reflection, again, on something that generally goes unseen. It's part of the background noise. So how do we do just that? How do we break free? How do we unchain minds, including our own? It's a decolonization experience. How do we unchain ourselves, our existence, from corporate fetters? So we really do want to hear from you. Call in with your thoughts and your experiences to share at 503-231-8187. I'm Ani. I'm here this morning with my co-host, Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
And you are listening to Positively Revolting. We come at you the first, third, and fifth Fridays on KBOO. And, you know, it's your community radio station. We're here for the public discourse. Do call us at 503-231-8187. It's about 19 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. This is actually what got me thinking of the spectacle and rebellion, aside from the fact that I saw that with great happiness that our program wound up on Guy Fawkes Day. Beyond that, there is so much happening, as Lynn was pointing out, in the unreality leading up to the elections.
Oh, it's not done. The unreality continues.
Sure that. But there's the whole spectacle of the Jon Stewart Colbert dual rallies, and how so many people seem to be swept up with thinking that this was somehow another actual political action instead of, you know, Comedy Central programming.
But there isn't a difference.
And that is the thing. When you're used to Fox News, Comedy Central looks like an actual political entity. I mean, that made my head spin three times, and I started thinking, oh my, if only Guy Debord were alive today. The spectacle around us is in full tilt boogie. What can we do to pierce it? This is a thing that is really to be shared by all of us. It is no one person's job to pierce it. We cannot wait for leaders. We don't want to advocate that a new nonprofit group form and study the situation to see what effective marketing techniques we can do with some research groups to craft our message. And no. This is like,
what about
it's
compromise?
Time for all
don't
of
we
us.
Just don't want to? Should we just compromise and
and just go about having things the way they are?
It's something like that.
You don't want to frighten the horses.
Well, and also that's one reason why folks like the Yes Men. And I believe we're going to be having the Adbusters people possibly on.
We may hear from the Adbusters people sometime this month.
They're interesting folks.
And they're doing something actually very, very interesting that I want to get us talking about in a moment, which is the Carnival-esque Rebellion, which takes place at the end of this month, the 22nd through the 28th. It looks like we have some listeners joining us now.
Excellent.
I also want to throw out, this is the 11th anniversary of the WTO protests. And that would be the other thing that got me thinking about the spectacle.
Yes.
And the use of joyous noise and street theater in turning things over. So with all of that, let's go ahead and talk to Stevie Ray.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Thank you for reminding me of the WTO protests. There was this old guy. I was up there during the WTO protests three days. This old guy gave me some tobacco seeds and said, if you really want to stick it to the man, plant these. He was giving them to all the people that were walking around during WTO smoking American Spirit cigarettes.
Right.
I thought that was pretty funny. But I read this book. I must have been in like fifth or sixth grade, and it was called The Festival of Fools. And it was
sounds fabulous.
Proposing the idea that fantasy and festivity are what we, the people, used to rely on for our ideas of spreading, you know, your spiritual beliefs or whatever.
Yeah.
Like once a year, all of the peasants would dress up like the aristocrats.
Right.
And then they would pretend to kill each other and act like total idiots in front of the king. And it was the one allowable time where everyone could really get into the streets. And then in Olympia, we used to do the Reclaim the Streets, which was kind of like a protest where we just take over an entire city block. in the roads, and we closed down all the traffic and, you know, the chants of whose streets are streets and all that stuff.
But absolutely.
The point was fun.
Right.
And then I know it's today's Guy Fawkes Day. Ideas are freaking bulletproof. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, those are my ideas. I'd like to see something like that, like everybody wearing masks in the road, and it's totally legal. There's nothing illegal about us taking our streets back.
Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yes, ma'am. Bye.
Take good care.
And it does. I like that Stevie Ray brought up that it does need to be fun. Molly Ivins used to say, freedom fighting, you need some beer and parties if you're going to be a freedom fighter.
Molly Ivins was a wise woman.
Yeah.
It's true. If resistance isn't fun, we're doing it wrong. It's got to be fun to be sustainable. It's got to look, well, like a lively alternative to the sort of cozy, cloyingly warm comfort sort of stuff that is sort of keeping people passive and numbed. It's, you know, got to be a joyous noise,
well, and it's
frankly.
A break. I want it to be a break from the fear that it has of people locked down and is twisting their minds in strange directions.
Well, and Stevie Ray mentioned the whose streets are streets protests. There were certainly a few of those in the Portland area and really all through the West Coast in the late 90s into 2000. And amidst, you know, police violence and provocateur action, that joyous noise, that carnival-like atmosphere of giant puppets and street theater and music and art and drumming in the streets, and the spirit of rebellion was really quite palpable and catching. And while not wholly new, such a din did break through numbed passive minds. It hooked, it broke through those minds that were hooked to the telly for their daily intake of so-called news, just as DeBord said it could. And the effect was totally palpable until the events of 9/11 quashed dissent, period. And we haven't really come back from that. Many people ran like frightened children back to Big Daddy for protection. And Big Daddy told us that to keep us safe, we needed to go to war and get back to shopping. War and shopping will keep us safe. Really? I mean, Jesus, really? War and shopping were the answers?
And, you know, a lot of folks thought so.
And a lot of people drank the Kool-Aid, right? And did that, drifting back into complacency that feels comfortable, at least at first. But it leaves you with that unsatisfied, alienated feeling, and it keeps coming back around the edges. And unexamined, it will lead to that first impulse to buy something, to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
And the cycle continues, even after Big Daddy's reign has ended. And that cycle is the topic of affluenza and other studies about the incredible consumer game we play in this country, that we use, the game that causes us to use five times the resources that this planet has to offer us. It's not okay. We got to like calm that down, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't just go out and look for the next fix.
Right.
It's a consumer addiction.
But a lot of folks are losing their jobs, so they are being forced to deal with that addiction.
Right. And that's a whole nother area, mm-hmm. right? Where now, if you've lost your job, somehow or another, it's your fault.
Up by your own bootstraps. Wait, you don't have any bootstraps?
Because, you know, we certainly don't want safety nets and you know, public health care, affordable housing, minimum wage, living wages needing to be comparable to the minimum wage. Certainly, you know, these are, that would cause us to be soft somehow. That this rugged individual who, you know, goes along to gets along, has the quiet life, is playing by the rules, and loses their job, has no recourse but a life of despair.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't okay, right? So time to get around to that rebellion thing again. So, Rabia, you're on the line. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Well, Walt Whitman advocating dissent and all could possibly be looking at his home being raided by the FBI on Democracy Now, if he were alive.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Right.
Those comments were pretty seditious.
In 1860,
yeah,
when he wrote them. Yeah.
That's right. So how, you know, like what practical thoughts do you have to separate people from their televisions? Because if you took away imagine if no one had television for a week, what would they do with themselves? you know, people in their households, if they didn't have it for an entire week, what would they do? And if they didn't have it for a month, you know, because people are really hurting. People are, you know, I mean, they are really hurting, but they're, you know, viva la France. They're not out in the streets saying, hey, what the heck is going on? We paid our taxes and now we're completely abandoned.
Well, one of my theories about that, one reason we are not out in the streets is one thing they forgot to do in France before they put in the draconian social measures is dumb down the population. They forgot to tear the public school system apart.
Well, so how do you make the population how do you disconnect them from their stupor?
Well, that is actually what I would say goes back to the role of the spectacle, of the conscious situation that one creates to try to pierce that numbed veil.
And I would say it's all screens. I feel like all screens are addictive. I had to be without my computer for 6 hours the other day, and I was like, what am I going to do? Wait.
She asked me to come over with my laptop.
Well, we were working on something, but even after that, I had to check myself because that is one of my theories about screens, that is the biggest crack cocaine there is. Whether it's a TV, a computer screen, it is number one crack cocaine to me.
Well, I would beg to differ that the television is much, much more powerful, and if you were to watch...
Well, I didn't say it wasn't. I'm just saying all screens are.
Well, I'll be the farmer raising my hand because you know me and my telecommunicator. But with television, you have a very specific kind of role modeling where people are watching primetime shows curiously filled with murder and crime. But primetime shows that show people basically mirror back. This is what successful people wear.
Mm-hmm.
How people talk. These are the furnishings and the dental floss and all the product placements that are in television shows. People,
I know, this is the car you drive.
Everything is a product placement in a television program, and then those products are conveniently at the mall where you can go get them, so you can emulate the actors on the television who are mirroring back how you should live your life.
That is the spectacle in a nutshell. And I'll just throw in that, you know, the mall is actually the place where you're supposed to go and exercise for safety, right? You don't want to expose yourself to the elements.
My mom does,
You can, join a senior group and do some power walking in the shopping mall.
How do we really affect change with this mind control is so powerful.
So again, I would go back to the situation and creating the situation, seeing every moment as a potential opening, a teaching moment, as
it
were.
Baby steps, blow up your TV.
I want to talk about maybe what is coming up internationally. The 22nd through the 28th of this month has been called the Carnival-esque Rebellion Week. It is an international week of actions, each of which are born locally by people just like us, right? By people talking to their friends and neighbors. Maybe you have a group of folks that you're used to doing some political action with and you can talk to them right off the bat. Maybe you just have friends and neighbors that you'd like to actually try something with. I'm going to go ahead and read text from the Adbusters site about the Carnivalesque Rebellion Week. A few people start breaking their old patterns, embracing what they love, and in the process discovering what they hate. Daydreaming, questioning, rebelling. What happens naturally then, according to the revolutionary past, is a groundswell of support for this new way of being, with more and more people empowered to perform new gestures unencumbered by history. Think of it as an adventure, as therapy, a week of pieing and pranks, of talking back, and talking back at your professors, of speaking truth to power. Some of us will put up posters in our schools and neighborhoods and just break our daily routines for a week. Others will chant, spark mayhem in big box stores, and provoke mass cognitive dissonance. Others still will engage in the most visceral kind of civil disobedience. And on November 26th, from sunrise to sunset, we will abstain en masse, not only from holiday shopping, but from all the temptations of our five-planet lifestyles. So says the text for the Carnivalesque Rebellion Week. They are Adbusters is actually looking for people who will be posting what actions are planned in different areas around the world to their website. And you can find out more about this at adbusters.org/campaigns. Adbusters.org, and go ahead and click on Carnival-esque Rebellion. This is the sort of thing that our first caller, Stevie Ray, was talking about with the demonstrations to take back our streets. This is the sort of thing we've seen in this area on Buy Nothing Day, but we haven't seen it in many a year. This is the sort of thing that any person can do, even alone.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it. It's fun.
Because it's sort of a not doing in many ways.
Kind of. Sometimes I do it even when there's not a special week called, just because I think it's fun to put the spirit of rebellion into daily life. I think that that is the only way we break through the veil. Some ideas for that? Well, I know that myself, I've had a lot of success and a whole lot of fun with spontaneous conversation. Try it.
And okay, how does that work exactly?
Spontaneous.
Okay, how does your spontaneous conversation work?
This is actually one of those times I actually go to a mall, right? How do you know Annie's up to something? She's in a shopping mall.
Yeah.
You know, going to a mall with two or three friends, all of whom can project in a theatrical manner when called for, to discuss some really pertinent personal issue that isn't discussed in public, and to start discussing it. And to discuss it in a way where you're actually trying to get some participation from people who might be in that aisle with you. It could be about body image. It could be about sexuality. I just found out my sister's queer. What am I going to do? It could be about the war. It could be about anything. It could be about finding products made in America. What? We can't find anything in the store made in America? Where are our jobs? It could look really, really patriotic if you want to stage it right. You can dress up. You can not dress up. These are really simple actions, and they're really, really fun. And if you want to get into some sort of scoring system, you can see amongst your friends who's more successful in getting the person next to you in the aisle to start talking and joining in the conversation.
Ah, that competitive energy.
Right? I mean, you know, if you want to bring a little competition into the game, try that. I suggest it. I have a lot of fun, and I think that those are teaching moments for people. Discuss racism in a shopping mall. Go ahead. It's great. You know, talk to people around you. Ask them questions that aren't supposed to be asked because maybe they're not so polite. Get people talking and thinking together. It's kind of fun. It's kind of exciting, and you never know what's going to happen. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you want to join us this morning. And I hope you do. I want you to share your thoughts, your ideas, your experiences, if you have participated in the past in acts of rebellion. And what are your ideas for coming up? What can we get about to doing together? Good morning, Joe. You're on the air.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
So, kind of what I've been thinking of, I've been thinking outside of the box, is to really get beyond the whole right-left dualism thing, the whole disguised made-up world of, depending on which side you're on, either the liberals are all evil and the conservatives are the greatest people in the world, or on the flip side, us liberals got it all going on, and those conservatives, you can't trust a bit of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, quoting the taxi driver rule, and I don't know if you know that or not, but...
What is that?
It's like 15%... 15% and 70%. You take any population, a country or a state or a church or whatever large population, and you get the bell curve distribution, and 15% of the people are absolute angels. 15% on the other hand are just total a-holes. And you got everybody else that's kind of in the middle. And I know this is true with, for example, conservatives and liberals as well. And that I have friends that are, you know, gun-owning, self-availed conservatives who actually have very, very genuine, kind spirits and actually fairly open minds. And so what I have been doing to kind of get the word out is instead of talking to all the people on the left that already agree with me, just reach out and start finding the reasonable people on the other side and looking to see where we can make common ground. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you can go...
Yeah, give us an example. That's a good one.
So you can go all the way on the very, very far right, and that's that Alex Jones fella. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Uh-huh. I've heard of him.
You know, what he has in common with us, or some of us, or most of us, is, yeah, he does not believe in that 9/11 thing. He thinks it's a big hoax. And then the other thing that we agree on is, you know, the whole IMF World Bank. We were protesting the IMF World Bank, like, well, back in 1999, 2000, 2001.
Sure.
And they're also against the whole one world government that's based on the banking elites.
Okay, and you get past that, then what do you do? When you get past the things that you agree on?
Well, you know, and so the things that you disagree on, I think it all really comes down to the age-old debate that goes between the enclosure and the commons. I really think that the people on the conservative side are all about the enclosure, and they're all about freedom, whereas us on the left, we're all about justice and the commons. And going back to that justice-freedom thing, you know, in the Constitution, I don't think we should really be afraid about discussing Constitution with even the most rabid right-winger, because justice is mentioned, the notion of justice is mentioned quite regularly.
But of course.
I don't think that we should really shy away from discussing the Pledge of Allegiance with them either, at least the original first Pledge of Allegiance, because speaks about freedom and justice.
But I got to say, the Pledge of Allegiance isn't the thing that's burning in my mind right now. I mean, what's burning in my mind is the need for health care, is the need for homes, is the need for an economy wherein
meaningful
we can all be supported.
Meaningful work for people. That they can support themselves.
These are the things that are burning in my mind. You know, the protection of civil liberties and human rights against torture. Those things, those are front and center. Discussing, you know, the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance with a radical right winger would leave me ultimately unsatisfied.
Well,
I don't understand the point.
So the point is to really bring the discussion to justice. And that's what we're all about. And the thing is that...
I guess I don't know exactly what you mean by justice.
Well, justice, like the justice movement, the global justice movement, all of those people that are against the corporations.
Okay. Sure.
All of the people that are against the wars, all the people that are against this and that.
I definitely agree that we can't let the left-right division stop us from talking to each other. That would be a real pity. We have to learn how to talk to each other, whether we agree or disagree on any of a number of topics.
And find ways that we work together.
Sure. All right. Well, thanks very much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Sequoia, you're on the line. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi,
Ani.
Good morning.
And I agree. I agree with your last statement that you made about that what we're facing should be about, you know, civil liberties and about justice, which allows us to have to enjoy those civil liberties, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But what I would like to comment is it would be nice to know that people are not going to be afraid of consequence. If you're going to stand up and take a stand against something, I think the most important thing is to realize that, yes, there will be consequences, but if we get through it, maybe real change could happen.
Absolutely.
So I think that's one of the main things why people are so afraid to take a stand and stand up and be positively revolted because you know, they're afraid of the consequence. They're afraid of the backlash. And I know for myself, I, you know, don't want to be afraid to take a stand because of the consequence. I want to be able to see justice be made, you know, for everyone. And then hopefully, you know, I'm big on going being controversial, being in a crowd of people and just bringing up something and just talking about it and just get it talking, get people going, get their minds going, you know, wake up the stupor, wake up
yeah.
The sheeple. So,
yeah, you're good at that.
But, you know, I think it's important, and, you know, and people just shouldn't be afraid to face the consequences. There's consequences in life no matter what you do in life.
That is so very true.
Whether it's your personal life, whether it's professional, there's always consequences in something when you stand for something. So,
thank you very much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Very, very well said. There are consequences for staying quiet. We know what those are. Mm-hmm. It's more business as usual, more raping of the planet, more crushing of our spirits, more dehumanization of ourselves and people across the ways as we further expand our military-industrial complex. We know what that world looks like, right? That's the world we really are needing to turn away from. So the consequences for that are immense. A dead planet, unhappy people, bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Consequences for breaking through, while maybe a little more acute, you know, certainly aren't as dire.
Well, it's like,
right?
What else are you going to do?
Right. Well, I guess you could just drink Mai Tais in the sunset till
That's
the end
true.
Of the world.
That's true. And
but I find that somehow unsatisfying.
Yeah.
After a weekend.
I was going to say.
A weekend now and again. But after that, back to it. Let's go ahead and talk to Ralph. You're on the line.
Yeah, just reading about Guy Fawkes for a while.
Read a little Guy Debord, too, while you're at it.
Yeah.
It's the day of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting when you kind of start to break down the politics that was going on at the time and the consequence of that act, what happened. It sounds kind of eerily like what happened about in 2010 here, 9/11, is that it was a plot to... you know, basically attack the government, standing institutions.
Sure,
of the government,
to blow up the House of Parliament.
Which, in this case, got foiled and was blamed on Catholic radicals.
Mm-hmm.
And they promptly went to war against the Catholic country of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And got embroiled into a massive war. It's very similar to Muslims attacking standing government and going to war against Islam, which we've been stuck in ever since. So I think one of the key components to unwrapping what's going on and to get some positive results is to explore the truth, because the truth is, I guess as I've said before, the truth will set you free.
That's what they say.
If you look up,
but first it'll piss you off.
Now it's a little foggy, but if you look up in the sky today, there's planes flying overhead, dropping some sort of aerosol out from the back of their jets, and you can see where it starts and where it stops, which implies to me that it's not a contrail, and they're doing some sort of cloud seeding. I don't really know what's going on. There apparently are hundreds of patents for this stuff. If you ask any of our local politicians, what's going on? Give me the truth. Will you get even an answer? Will you get anyone to say, I'll look into that and get back to you?
My guess is no.
Yeah, of course it's no. They'll say that you're a nut.
Have you tried it?
Yeah.
And did they tell you were a nut?
Exactly.
Really feel like your representatives are listening to you when they come back with that response.
Right. And so that may be a, you know, that's what's weird is we've kind of suspended reality on things that are going on. And that's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't get the truth. And if you can't get the truth, then how can you possibly, you know, you can break down all the things that we'd like to see happen, but I think we just need to get back to the basic of you need to be honest and, you know, put your cards on the table. And we're just not living in that world anymore. But I think that's what we have to demand from the start. And then let's move on to all of the items that we think are positive. Otherwise, I think everything just gets twisted. Look at the healthcare thing. Does that really come out in our favor, or that came out against us?
Well, I'm not entirely sure how that came out actually in anyone's favor, but that doesn't negate the need for actual real health care.
No, absolutely not. But if you let the industry insiders write the bills...
Well, then you're going to get something that serves the industry insiders.
You
hey,
know,
Ralph, so, thank you very much for your call this morning. Take care. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to join us this morning. Positively Revolting will be on the air for another 11 minutes here in the 11th month.
On the 5th day.
Yeah, there's that. I was trying to
as far
as possible.
I know, it's your favorite
number. I'm all happy about it. Okay, and we have Bob up next. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good. Hey, I really enjoy your show this morning. What I'd like to discuss is, I understand that, the progressive movement and the liberals really took a beating this last Tuesday, so I would like to know what our guest thinks about the direction that our country is going to go here now that liberalism has been defeated.
Well, we don't really have a guest this morning. We just have Lynn and myself rambling around the studio.
Yeah.
But, to me, whenever elections pass by, I have that same sinking, dissatisfied feeling of business as usual, regardless of who wins. Sometimes
that
sinking feeling is worse than other times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, Oregon's gubernatorial race.
Yeah.
I was feeling pretty sick about that for a while.
Yeah.
When things were uncalled. And now it's called for Kitzhaber, and I'm happier.
Yeah.
But I don't expect that to fix anything, because
that
can't, right?
Yeah,
Electoral politics, in and of itself, that's not going to save us. That's not going to help us.
No.
Like, if God intended us to vote, he would have given us good candidates.
Yeah.
I think that it's
What's the question? So we do have to stop voting here, do we just elect the king? I mean, we kind of got the king, King Obama now. I mean, should we just crown him king? Or what do you think?
Well, I think that electoral politics leaves me really flat.
Yeah.
I went ahead and voted. I think that ballot measures are especially important.
Yeah.
And while we have this electoral system, I will use it to try to, at least get people into office that I don't believe will actively hurt me. But
that's
dissatisfying.
With our government right now, I don't think, I think we're in stalemate. Nothing's going to happen for 2 years, which is why
we can't leave it to that kind of politics.
Which is probably good for the United States, because now, our government can't hurt us as citizens. It's just going to be stalemate.
No, I don't know. I mean, I think that our government's been hurting us as citizens for, 200 years now.
I agree 240. With you, especially all the taxes and regulations.
Well, see,
on us,
here we have
I'm
a
tired
difference.
Of paying taxes. I mean, I paid $30,000 in taxes last year, and I'm just tired of it. I don't want to pay any more,
I believe that if you actually got goods and services for that money.
I didn't. I just gave it to a bunch of welfare cases. And
it's not the welfare cases you gave it to.
Really?
It's the military you gave it to, sir.
And
that's really the issue.
People who smoke pot, that's what.
Yeah, no. I think
I'm glad the pot measure got defeated, too, in both California and here. I think that's just really good.
All right.
You
can be very happy with that.
It is a gateway drug. It is a gateway drug, and I think that's a problem with
it. Do you realize, of course, your taxes go to pot law enforcement and the incredible amount of people actually in jail?
Protect us as a nation. I think a strong military protects us as a nation.
Okay, well then you should be happy that you paid that $30,000, because half of it went to protect that strong military, and quite a lot of the rest of it went to jail pot smokers.
I feel safer now, because we got big guns pointed at our, and nuclear weapons pointed at our enemy.
Bob, you are such a classic case.
You are, and we're in a circular conversation that's really not going anywhere. So we really thank you for your call, and we're really happy that you listened to the station. And I hope that you will take some notes and read a little Guy Debord.
Really good.
And perhaps this is one of those stage conversations and a teaching moment. It's hard to say. But I do say that realpolitik, the electoral system, that always leaves me feeling flat.
Yeah.
It is so very important to look beyond that. We cannot just sort of elect saviors, right? People don't save us. We save ourselves. We create movements with our friends, with our neighbors, with our families. It's our responsibility, not anyone else's. It's our responsibility to turn it over. It's our responsibility to make the world new and to go ahead and turn away from the system that glorifies the military, from the system that glorifies the ruling elite and the corporate rule. This is our job, no one else's. We can't just sort of elect a new system. It doesn't work that way. So regardless of electoral results, it's so very important to engage and engage each other in heavy dialogue and then plan action, plant gardens, you know, take care of each other, mutual aid, that sort of thing.
I'm for it. What's coming up on KBOO this morning?
Oh, goodness. There's so many things to know about, so many things to do. This morning at 9 o'clock, APA Compass looks at Asian Pacific Americans in the media. Also, there's another installment in the series Pop Watch and another Angry Asian Minute. At 10 o'clock, listen to Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11:30 on this month's Community Grooves, producer and host Natalie Buto features The Art of Reconciliation. Guests are the event founder, as well as a representative from co-presenting organization Colored Pencils. All that coming right up. We have Anonymous up next on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So here's the exact prime example of why I just am so fed up with the stupidity and the mindless mental screw out there. We have wing nuts like this guy that just calls up that says,
Bob.
He's proud of giving all of his money to the military complex, which they turn around and use it against him and suppress him. And here's a man that's probably driving an old 1972 piece of crap Datsun 4 pickup because he can't afford a nice car because his military complex is sucking him dry. But he won't let the people that are in the gateway drug, which is a billion-dollar industry that will pull us out of debt and help people, and it's a self-funding program. It has nothing to do with taxes whatsoever. So here's my thing is, why am I trying to help selfish white people, rich, selfish white people that are destroying millions of people's lives? Why am I trying to help them?
Well, how are you trying to help them?
Well, I try to produce television shows to help them, give them opportunities to change their lives. I help make vegan, raw, organic chocolate. I help making healthy foods and putting my kids in healthy schools.
Well, aren't you doing that for your kids?
So what I figured out is forget these selfish people.
What I'm going
to do is hunker into my own little trench, and I'm going to worry about my own family and become more sustainable and self-sufficient, and he will be the first person in line in the FEMA camp. He will be the first person in line in the bread line.
I think that's an interesting idea. I choose not to separate us so much.
Yeah, and you really had it there till the separation part, not so necessary. There's a whole lot out there to do by taking care of your family and friends and people that you care about.
Because it makes the world a better place for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Well, sure, but then you have these people that come up and they're like vampires and they start tapping into you and pulling your reserves out and drowning you.
Right, but you're going into the paradigm that it's us and them.
And we got to get rid of that paradigm because that's where the poison lies.
Yeah. And they
How do you separate the us from them when...
Well, you're mad at them. You're mad at them it's understandable anger. But
angry that no one's went to jail for 9/11. Angry that no one's went to Afghanistan for treason.
I'm not happy about that either. Trust me.
All these guys are treasonous.
They are.
And so we just sit here and we fight for crumbs against ourselves.
We build that better world, just like you're talking about doing, producing those media programs, producing radio or television in your case, radio in my case, for other people, it's writing and blogging, producing good, wholesome food out of our gardens for our families, actually getting real with each other, developing and strengthening those social bonds and relationships so that maybe eventually they'll reach out and touch somebody as alienated as our last caller. Because the root of his issues is really alienation. He's frightened. He's alone. He wants to feel safe. Just like everyone else.
It's small steps that make it work.
And now, look at that. We have run out of time.
Thank
you very
much
for your call. I got to say, I've got two comments via instant message. I love the world of instant message. The goddess Teresa host of Press Watch, writes in to say that contrails start and stop according to local variance in humidity and barometric pressure, and that the fact that those vapor trails sort of start and stop out of nowhere isn't necessarily a sign that they are nefarious.
We count on Teresa
jury,
for these things.
Jury pins on those things.
Thank you, Teresa.
And I'm sorry we aren't able to get to all of the callers on hold right now, but we do.
Call earlier in the show, folks.
We do want to remind you to listen 2 weeks from now on the 19th. We will have as our special guest Mike Bonanno from the Yes Men and continue this discussion of Carnivalesque Rebellion and the use of theater to turn things over and make the world new. Tune in then, won't you? And stay tuned now for the APA Compass.